I found myself mentally quipping these obnoxious millennial core meme quotes to myself as I was watching it, like Neo dodging the bullets, like me when I say something controversial about Taylor Swift, like Neo making the bullets stop and fall down, me when I log off. It's just like, oh, I have been internet pilled in a way that the Matrix did not anticipate.
Those are pretty good, though. Those are pretty funny. Yeah, those are
good ones. And that is something that the movie kind of encourages, deliberately or not, is to, like, if you are an online person, this movie is about you being online. I'm Max Fisher.
I'm Erin Ryan.
With us is Jamel Bui. Jamel, thank you so much for joining us. Jamel's a New York Times columnist and also the co-host of the great movie podcast, Unclear and Present Danger.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I should say for listeners that technically our podcast is a politics podcast based off of movies. Sometimes people get very upset when we don't like recap a movie. So I feel like I should let folks know that so they don't get annoyed.
Well, one of the reasons I was so excited to have you on this series is that what we are doing with the Offline Movie Club is kind of doing for internet movies what you have been doing for 90s action thrillers about politics and national security. So it felt like a very natural fit to have you on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So to introduce the show, this is the Offline Movie Club. Every episode, we watch a beloved movie, then discuss how that movie reflects or shapes how we think about tech and the internet. This week, we are talking about The Matrix, the story of a gang of Gen X hackers. Discover the world as one big computer program, rise up against the machine overlords that run it, which, this being 1999, involves wearing an enormous amount of black leather. It is almost impossible to sum up this movie's cultural impact, pack all the ideas. But Jamel, what do you think makes this movie important for how we think about technology and the internet?
Oh, wow. First of all, I think this movie captures like a certain ethos of what the internet could be or might have become. That was, I think, prevalent in the late 90s, which is like the internet as this liberatory thing, and that very much still pretty, I think, the language of how we talk about tech mm-hmm. is something that can like liberate people. The internet as something that can liberate people, although in the film the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar appear to be living in squalor, they see themselves as having been freed of the Matrix, having been freed of this control, and that for them is a kind of freedom and liberation that I think this movie does like very much tap into that, like that vision of what the internet could be.
Yeah, there is something to the way this movie captures and conveys this idea of the internet as both a tool of authoritarian control and also a like vessel for liberation that I know it like comes from some of the like William Gibson and some of the cyberpunk authors that were predated The Matrix, but I feel like it's really still very much with us. Erin, what do you think makes this movie important for how we think about tech and the internet?
Well, I think that if you're around my age, so I graduated from high school in the early aughts, just prior to 9/11, not to date myself, but everybody around my age has a very clear memory mm-hmm. of the first time that they saw this movie yeah. and how incredibly impactful it was on them, and how people came out of the theater just being like, this is like, I cannot overstate the extent to which this was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
This was a full on. You mentioned because it was the late 90s, there was a lot of leather. I think that this movie made that a thing.
Oh, totally.
In the late 90s.
Unfortunately, it also made nu metal a thing.
I don't know if it made
That's unfair.
Pin Rob Zombie on the Wachowskis. Anyway, I'm sorry, Aaron. Please go on.
I think that something that is super interesting about it is at the time, it felt like we were watching a movie about like philosophy, different philosophical approaches to what us standing on the threshold of this new tech could mean. And it felt very speculative. And now looking back, it seems very, in some ways, like predictive, but not necessarily in the way that the movie intended, which we're going to get into.
There is something fascinating about, like you're saying, the movie coming out at this moment where we're all starting to realize the internet is going to be a thing. It's very hard to untangle the degree to which they are accurately, for the most part, with extreme like precision, accurately predicting what the internet has become, or just because the movie is so influential, like actually giving shape to that. I do think that I just think that you could not find another piece of culture that is more influential in the last 25 years for how we think about the internet. I mean, obviously, there's like...
No, I can't believe this movie's 25 years old. I was watching it yesterday. I've watched it so many times. But when I was watching it yesterday, just to kind of get brushed up on it, it all holds up. Like, it was crazy how this is 25 years... 1999 was 25 years ago, which doesn't seem... That's not right. But it holds
the
up so well.
The peak of human civilization.
I know, we're going to talk about that too. Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely get into it in a way. But, like, Prince sang about partying like it's 1999, and he was kind of right. Like, that was really the last time that we could really party.
Right.
Right? Like, that was was it the last good time?
Prince and the Wachowskis.
Yes.
They knew.
They knew. 1999 was it.
What did they know about 9/11, and when did they know it?
I don't know, but they should have told. Maybe if they were more online, they could have told more people.
Yeah, I do think that there are so many through lines to this movie about the internet that have held up so well that it is shocking to watch it now and know that it is predictive and not a commentary on everything that has come before. Like, obviously, all of the internet subcultures that this gives rise to. Jamel, like you were talking about the idea that it is like both a tool of authoritarian interest, but also the place of revolutionary struggle against them. Also, the idea that the internet is simultaneously unreal, but is also the place where we project the truest versions of ourselves is like incredibly prescient.
Is it the truest versions of ourselves, though?
Well, that first scene with Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves when they're loaded into the white room and they're talking about like why you look the way you look in the Matrix. And he says that when you go into the Matrix, you appear as the projected vision of yourself. And that was part of the like trans allegory of the movie. And like the Wachowskis have talked about how that was part of it, where it's like you go into the Matrix and you vision yourself. The character switch was originally supposed to be, to present as a man in the quote unquote real world in the future and then present as a woman in the Matrix. And that was supposed to be kind of a wink at this like trans allegory of it.
Yeah, I mean, and we didn't even really get into the red pill of it all. Like the red pill motif, like we talk about its overall influence. The red pill has been a phrase that has been adapted by the worst people who took the wrong lessons from this film. And I will say I've noticed there was sort of an uptick in red pill references for years and years. You know, red pill is like realizing that like the women are really keeping you down, like the systems keep, whatever. Until the Wachowskis came out and were like, listen, it's about being trans. The red pill is estrogen. I've seen like a slight downward turn in incels and, you know, internet MRAs using red pill terminology.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Wachowskis did ruin their fun.
Yeah. Ugh. They made their fun. They made the movie. They get to
That's
ruin
true.
It.
Yeah. The last thing I will say about why I think this movie is important, and then we can get into the questions, is that I think that this movie just could not be more formative for modern day Silicon Valley and how it sees itself. Like, this doesn't get talked about a lot outside of the Valley, but when I was like spending time there, like reporting there, there's the like this entire generation of the like Elon Musk at the top end to Mark Zuckerberg at the younger end who come up thinking that this movie is about them. And this movie is about Silicon Valley and Silicon Valley startups. And they like build the ideas that they take from this movie that they take to be about them into the products. And like, we'll get into that in the questions. happens when we talk about the movie's real world impact, but I just wanted to mention it now because I think that it is still like very much with us. Like anytime you log into Twitter or Facebook, I think you're seeing the impacts of this movie. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's get into the questions. This is a set of topics we discuss each episode about how the movie shapes how we see the world. First one, what is the biggest thing this movie gets right? Aaron, what do you think?
Okay. Well, I don't know if this was intended in the film, but something that I kind of took away, there's this part where I think the agents are interrogating Neo. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, you know, the world that was created for them. And it's like a world that people love. And I've been thinking a lot about the divergence, the great like divergence between who we are in real life and who we have put online. Hmm. Like if in 10,000 years, somebody came to like a scorched earth and they found like a several terabyte hard drive and on it, there was like a bunch of social media profiles and they were like, mm-hmm. oh, we can remake these people from, we can like reverse engineer these people. The people that they would make from reverse engineering the social media profiles would look nothing like our digital ghosts yeah. look nothing like.
They would be assholes, first of all.
They would be like, just like very egotistical assholes mm-hmm. who never really have any real pain or struggle mm-hmm. that they don't try to monetize or get attention over. Like, it mm-hmm. just would be just a real gross type of person. And like, I think that they hit on this sort of divergence of the public versus private self. And, you know, the people who have been liberated from the Matrix, the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar, live kind of in squalor. And in the Matrix, they live just normal human lives that seem mm-hmm. comparably luxurious and cool. And that to me just like struck me as like, oh, that's like what we say we are on social media versus like what we are in real life. We're like eating snot and like we're all wearing like beaten up sweaters from Zara in 2011, which is the last time Zara made good sweaters. But they're getting ripped up. And, you know, but like in and then on social media, on the internet, we are pretending that were this.
So this is a movie about how when you post on Instagram, you are posting an idealized version of your own life that looks way cooler than.
I think it's about the way that we choose to represent ourselves and the things that we choose to erect digitally mm-hmm. as representations of the self and how they're not like they've diverged so much that it doesn't. I don't know.
There's this interesting dichotomy in the movie with the like characters, like our heroes, who realize that you see the Matrix, understand what's happening, and know that they can go in and use it to create the like idealized versions of themselves that have like super strength and superpowers and are super smart, and everyone else who doesn't realize that and they're just kind of like normal humdrum versions mm-hmm. of themselves.
Yeah, it's like people using the glam filter on TikTok versus people just going raw dog on TikTok.
Seeing the Matrix is having access to an even better glam filter.
Yes, exactly. It's like choosing to, you get used to seeing yourself with the glam filter on. So you're like, this is me. This mm-hmm. is how I look. And when you see like your real self, you're like, no, this is, no, you like reject it. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed very predictive to me about the way that
Waking up to seeing how the, yeah.
Exactly. Like difference. Waking up is to be like, oh, who I'm putting out there is not in any way mm-hmm. who I actually am.
It is amazing to think that they would have anticipated that in 1999. Like what was social media in 1999? Like instant messenger?
Do we have Friendster back then?
I think there might have been Friendster. Definitely AOL Instant Messenger. That was around.
Yeah, I think MySpace. Right. Yeah, to look at that and to be able to see coming that this is going to be a place where there is this going to be, you are going to have to realize that you are creating a false version of yourself. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good prediction.
Yeah.
Jamel, what do you think? What's the movie get right?
Well, I mean, first of all, that terrorists would crash vehicles into buildings.
of all of the moments when I cringed during this, it was I did not think of it during the helicopter crash. But yeah, in retrospect, I see it.
But a more serious answer. I think we were relating to a similar scene where Agent Smith is interrogating Morpheus, and he's explaining that originally the Matrix was a paradise, everyone was happy, and it was a massive failure. Entire crops were lost. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought what insight that captures is that, I mean, you look at Twitter, you look at, I mean, any social media, right? People as much as people say they want civility, as much as people say they want a kind of place where we can have like reasoned discussion, the fact of the matter is that sort of like all these places feed off of conflict. And that the people who use them like the fact that there is lots of conflict. Part of the draw of Twitter, even now in its like kind of Musk era, is the opportunity of like seeing, you know, which quote unquote main character emerges and what people are, what terrible things people are going to say about that person. And I really do think, you know, the fact that this movie, in this film, the machines give up on trying to create a paradise for humanity and just create, you know, 1999 create a place that is full of disappointment and fear and worry and want and all these things, does actually capture something quite real about, not just about like human psychology, but about the way our digital spaces have actually developed. Like there, it turns out there actually really isn't much of a market for a place where people are just like chill with each other. it's what people want is a place where there can be conflict.
It's a great point. It's that speech is in retrospect a monologue about how Blue Sky is never going to take off.
Right.
Mastodon is never going to be the place. So people don't want the nice social network. No, you're right. And it, what's so ironic about that especially is that the overlords in the Matrix create a digital prison for us that promotes, you know, struggle and misery grudgingly. They're kind of dragged into it, whereas I think the folks behind Facebook and Twitter were quite happy to do that.
Right. I don't know if this place for it, but fun Matrix lore. So if the original Matrix was like a paradise, there, you know, Matrix fans theorize that there was a second iteration of the Matrix that was like kind of like a nightmare world that was all horrible. And that didn't work out well. And they theorize this because in the second film, there are all these like weird nightmare creatures that like don't make any sense
I see.
In the context of 1999, but do make sense if they're older, discarded programs from an older iteration of the Matrix.
I love the idea that the second Matrix was a like gothic Mary Shelley A24 horror thriller.
Right. It was like Hereditary.
Right.
Wait, there is a second Matrix? I heard they didn't exist. I heard there's only one Matrix movie and it was made in 1999 and the story ends at the end of that movie.
I recognize the legitimacy of the second Matrix movie. It definitely takes itself way too seriously, but the action scenes are really good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know that a second Matrix movie exists.
This isn't the point of this podcast, but I do have I could talk for a very long time in defense of the second Matrix movie.
I'll give you my one sentence defense of it. I'm curious if this aligns with your take on it. I think that the second Matrix is just a perfect English language, American place, Chinese wuxia kung fu movie that just like very loosely adapts the lore of the first Matrix. And I love that. I love Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So we just got to do it again.
Crouching robot.
that is not my take, although I think it's a very good one. My take is that I think that movie is a great example of how like people can subvert their own creation. Like the whole point of that movie is that like there is no the one. In fact, there were many of these guys.
Right.
And so, you know, Neo's task is to break himself out of prophecy. It's like a reverse Dune almost, but that's fine.
Right. I buy that because like the Wachowskis talk a lot, especially when they started to speak more about the movies as trans allegories. A line they would use a lot is they would always say, ultimately our movies are about love. And if you watch the first Matrix, that doesn't super track because it's a hero's journey about fighting a pure evil. But yeah, in the second one, they kind of loop around to like, well, the solution is to synthesis and to like all of us become one super person/machine collective, which I do not think is the answer to modern social media. But anyway, part of what I found really interesting as I was thinking about what this movie gets right is how I feel like we have reevaluated so many times over the last 25 years to mean totally different things. And every single time it's true and correct. Like what initially came out, like I took it to be a like sci-fi dystopian cyberpunk story about like what it would be like if the machines took over and like what that would look like. And then later it became like, oh, actually, we started to see it as more of an allegory for authoritarianism and capitalism and control with the machines mostly as symbolic. And now I feel like we've looped all the way back around and we see it as about internets and the internet and machines again, because now that is synonymous with capitalism and authoritarianism. So like, I don't know to the extent to which that was deliberate, but I thought that was really interesting how like all of the readings have become like simultaneously true and kind of built into each other.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play a clip from Morpheus explaining The Matrix to Neo to talk about something else I think this movie got right.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
And Lawrence Fishburne really makes this movie.
Yeah, the casting is so good. Well, I think I just realized as I was listening to that, is they're talking about smell and taste and touch. And later when Morpheus is a prisoner of when Agent Smith gets him by himself, Agent Smith talks about how gross it is that he has to smell and taste and touch.
I never made that connection. You're right.
Yeah. The people are gross to him.
Yeah. I do love that scene. You know what I hate the most? The smell.
Yes.
It's a pretty good Hugo Weaving.
Oh my God. He's so good. He's great too. If him or Morpheus had been miscast,
I know,
this
at all.
Whole movie. Yeah. Would fall apart.
Hugo Weaving plays it with a like perfect level of hamminess that you believe he is a robot trying to play human, but you also believe that he has actual rage underneath the surface.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. No, the smell scene is actually perfect for this because he's like, if I can remember this correctly, he's like, and it's true. He's like almost like agitated.
Have to do it in Hugo Weaving.
All right. I hate this place. This zoo, this prison, this reality, whatever you want to call it. I can't stand it anymore. It's the smell.
Are you really getting the pauses?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen this movie like 200 times.
Well, one thing that I love about that Morpheus monologue is that it is like you could read that so many different ways, and obviously like we've talked about the like red pill of it all, and there's a lot of people who read it about like, oh yes, the prison that of your mind that he's describing is feminism, or there's like a way to read it now that it's about like it's about Silicon Valley or it's about capitalism more broadly
or gender.
Or gender, yeah. And my mind actually kept watching it this time, kept coming back to the Arab Spring, of all things. And I kept thinking about, like, so many popular uprisings, like, starting with that one and ever since, in authoritarian states, like, it's first organized online in what are both these open digital spaces that are these kind of necessary organizing places for revolution, but are also controlled and heavily influenced by authoritarian governments and propaganda. So like this idea of digital spaces as both of these things at once, and like the place of this intense hero's journey competition between authoritarianism and revolutionary resistance, I just thought was just like amazingly prescient, because it didn't come true for another 12 years after the movie came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, moving to the next category, what is the smallest thing you think this movie gets right? Weird, quirky little stuff. I will start. If there were a group of renegade programmers who could control reality, at least one of those programmers would be a sex perv who tries to spam the world with porno. I thought that was pretty insightful.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was pretty good.
I don't know if there would be one mouse on the team. It would maybe be mostly mouses on the team.
Mostly mouses and ciphers.
That's right.
I think it would be mostly mouses and ciphers, especially like the facial hair aspect of cipher.
Yes.
I think they would be, they would all be horny for Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I hate to, like, I don't, I'm glad that she's not overly sexualized in
sure.
the film. I think right. that that is a good thing. But they would all be so horny for Trinity.
It would definitely go from a love triangle to a love octagon for sure.
There is one scene, the audio that you just played, where you can hear Morpheus's clothes squeak as he changes position.
Yes.
And that squeak is very accurate, because those would be squeaky, very squeaky outfits.
Yeah, it did occur to me, how are they supposed to be running away from these supercomputer killer robots when they're wearing the squeaky ass leather? It's
like,
not the best clothing. Yes.
As they're running? Yeah. That's not performance gear. No. They failed to predict moisture wicking stretch.
That's true. Yeah, all of their technology, they did not have moisture wicking. It was very disappointing.
No
Uniqlo in the Matrix.
Still a couple years away. The Wachowskis had incredible imagination, but they couldn't see that coming.
I think, you know, the small thing this gets right is almost certainly there'd be plenty of people who are like, go back into the Matrix for a really delicious steak. Why not? Plug me right back in. That steak is best looking steak on film, like straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe only the only thing that comes close is the steak they eat in Twister.
When do they eat steak in Twister? I don't remember that.
They meet at a character's like mom's house or something, and they have steak and eggs, and they have amazing looking. I don't even like steak that much. They have a great looking steak in Twister.
The way
Joey Pants eats that steak mm-hmm. in The Matrix makes it look like the best thing you'll ever eat.
Well, the thing that is so funny about that shot is that I'm sure they were doing it 1,000 times and he went through 100 steaks. He fucked up cutting it. So it's actually 2 pieces of steak and one is dangling off of the other. And that does actually make it look a little bit better, unfortunately.
Wow. I kind of want to listen to an entire podcast episode of the best looking meals in cinema.
It's everything in Tempopo, I feel like, is going to be the winner of eight times out of 10.
I think any pizza in an animated film automatically looks like the best food ever. Spaghetti and meatballs mm-hmm. in an animated film.
Miyazaki food is maybe peak food in movies, yeah. I do, it's a good point. Like, why are they not taking more snack breaks in this? Like, when Neo has the cookie, he loves that cookie. It makes him feel better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that they're not pulling over and getting Doritos, especially because consequence free. You can't gain weight.
Yeah.
No heart disease.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
Wow. They must have cut the scene where like Neo's blood was like no cholesterol. Like it makes
<That's right. laughs>
I'm the one. This isn't going to affect me whatsoever. He's just like putting like soft serve ice cream directly into his mouth and his body just can reject it like they're bullets.
Something else I thought it got right is it really nailed the late 1990s Gen X malaise of we all have high paying corporate jobs, but we're still very angry at the world. Like mm-hmm. there's a real we're going to riot at Woodstock 99 to this movie.
Yeah. Did this come out before or after Woodstock 99?
I think before, because I think Woodstock 99 was over
did
the
this
summer. This was
cause
April.
Cause Woodstock 99.
Again, maybe if they had been wearing leather dusters when they rioted.
Yeah, maybe. I think this movie also gets right the fact that if you are a light-skinned woman with very dark hair and like a small face and a thin neck, that haircut looks amazing.
It's a great movie for the pixie cut.
Yeah. Like the pixie cut are like the little just like flippy, mm-hmm. like kind of shag, not even a bob yet. The Trinity haircut, if you are of a specific body type and like it just like looks so good.
Yeah, I will.
You are Carrie Ann Moss in 1999.
It's a narrow condition set.
I think there's a lot of like dancers who are built that way.
Sure.
Like, I think if you're just like a real petite lady, that mm-hmm. is a great haircut for you. You don't need to listen to The Matrix and wear your hair long. You don't need to free yourself from blow drying, you know?
I did appreciate that even if they didn't take time to snack, they did all take a second to make sure they looked incredibly cool when they went back to The Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. We can get into that a little bit more later, but like, they looked distractingly cool when mm-hmm. they went back into the Matrix. Like if I were just outside of the building where they came to get Morpheus and I saw a bunch of people that looked like that walking into the building, I would like clock them. I'd be mm-hmm. like, those are what's going on?
It's too conspicuous.
Yeah, exactly. They should have gone in as just like regular looking, like slightly overweight people.
Should more revolutionary extremist movements try to look really cool while they're doing it?
No, I think they should try to look less cool.
Okay.
I think they should look frumpier.
I mean, I do think it's interesting that like what looked cool is like this like, extremely hyper-specific aesthetic. Like no one in there is like dressed. No one, like if it were me, I would be like, I'm dressing like Paul Newman in The Matrix. You know?
You would definitely pick a more timeless look, I feel like.
I'm Miles Davis. just high Ivy style.
Some nice elbow patches,
I have a semi-automatic weapon under this tweed jacket.
I'm Katherine Hepburn. I got my hands in my pockets of my high-rise pants. I got a gamely tilted hat on. I'm wearing a fedora.
I would join this revolutionary movement.
Yeah, it would be confusing to people. What's going on? Looks like Grace Kelly
is bombing the building.
Grace Kelly's doing a terrorist attack.
Grace Kelly has joined Al Qaeda.
Grace Kelly's hit the second tower.
Well, we can laugh because we remember it.
That's right. Yeah. We're laughing with respect.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What do we think is the biggest thing this movie gets wrong? It's tough to pick this out, but I did find a couple, but I'm curious if you guys have any.
I mean, I think it relates to, I mean, the fact that the group of the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar does not contain any sort of, you know, insane, socially maladjusted incel types is actually like, I think a major thing it gets wrong. Sort of this idea that this sort of liberatory take of the internet would not contain any kind of like serious social maladjustment. Cypher, he is like venal, right? Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't like living in the real world anymore, but he doesn't appear to be insane. He's just like, I don't want to be here anymore.
Right. Right.
Mouse is a pervert, but like within like normal range of like, you know,
right, and played for jokes.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's
it's never non-consensual for Mouse. Sure. He like created he's not perving on people. But yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying I think the notion that the internet would not just cultivate and inculcate sort of like positive values or mm-hmm. expressive values, but actually like deeply not just negative, like socially maladjusted, authoritarian, mm-hmm. Sort of like the dark side of the human psyche, that it would also develop and inculcate these values in its users, is a thing that the movie totally missed.
Yeah, I have a take for when we get to what would be different if this came out today. I have a take on how it would deal with these. One smaller thing, admittedly, that they did get wrong that had me laughing a lot at the movie is the like very quaint view of digital surveillance, that like the agents are just kind of wandering around hoping they're going to run into one yes. of the main characters. Like, I just read this New Yorker story about the New York Sanitation Department scanning across hundreds of CCTV cameras to catch someone who was dumping soil and track them back to their house. So like the garbage man has better digital surveillance than the agents in the Matrix.
Okay, but the garbage man also has better digital surveillance than people who investigate rape, because they're like tens of thousands of like untested rape kits,
right.
And police are like, we can't do anything about it. So, So I mean, it's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed trash bag.
It's a mixed bag. The biggest thing the movie gets wrong, I think that it tries to explain away these moments, but I think that the way that the bodies look, both like I think the way that like Neo's body is supposed to be like emaciated and stuff, when I just feel like people would be like chubbier.
Mm-hmm. He looks great when he wakes up in the pod,
right? And that, you know, in the Matrix, there's nobody who is like, in the Matrix, like everybody's body is like perfect,
mm-hmm.
even though they're like, oh, this isn't the perfect world. Everyone's still, there's no like fat people in the Matrix.
Sure.
So it's not really a reflection of the different sizes of people that like actually exist in the real world. I also found myself, this is like weird, but it was filmed in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was filmed in Sydney, Australia. There are Chicago streets they're talking about. They're on Wabash. They're on State and Wabash. They're running around. Like, I lived in Chicago for a long time and I'm distracted by the fact that these are loop streets, but they're not in Chicago.
I think we're supposed to think it's Chicago.
Right.
I think it's the idea.
It's not, because I'm looking at it and it's not. So I don't know why. It's like a hyperfixation of mine when something's supposed to take place in Chicago and it doesn't, I get so mad. Like, the movie Wicker Park was filmed in Montreal and I hate it because it is not in Chicago and it's supposed to be in Chicago. So anyway.
Isn't it like every Chicago movie not directed by John Hughes does not actually take place in Chicago?
No, there's like the first Batman movie, the first Chris Nolan Batman movie does take place, like Gotham is Chicago. And then the Transformers, I watched one of the Transformers movies in a movie theater on Navy Pier that is destroyed in the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was like a cool thing.
That's fun.
Yeah, they fucked up Chicago. But anyway, that's a me thing. I get really upset with like Chicago misrepresentation.
The real Matrix is when the machines try to trick you into thinking that Sydney is Chicago.
We're not anywhere near the loop.
One thing I thought they got wrong, that like movies just were allowed to get wrong in the 90s and 2000s, is to do this like kind of hand waving about what quote unquote computer hacking is, where there's just this like thing they do in like The Net or GoldenEye where they just like hammer at a keyboard and they're like, ah, yes, we hacked the mainframe. Like, you could still get away with that because nobody knew what hacking was in the 90s. But now we know it's just like, oh, it's a phishing scam where they steal your password. So you have to be a little more sophisticated about
it. It's extremely uncinematic, which is why we've never had a good movie about blogs. Because it's just not, being on a computer is not cinematic. I think that this crew here can appreciate. I think that people who make movies just don't have any friends who are hackers, just like they don't have any friends mm-hmm. who are journalists. Because mm-hmm. I feel like movies get journalism wrong, except for Spotlight. But mm-hmm. they get journalism wrong in a similar way, where it's just like, most people just think it's this. Like, a woman sleeping with their sources.
That's what journalism is to most movie people. Yeah,
and then like the person that's the subject of the story would get a phone call. It's like, turn the TV on and it's a mm-hmm. news story about them. And nobody called them telling them that they were doing a story about them to like check facts or give them a chance to speak about themselves. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just Hollywood nonsense.
I was gonna say, I would love to see a movie with realistic hacking in it. Just sort of like, we gotta hack into the, hack past the firewall. And then he picks up his cell phone, he dials a couple numbers. He's like, hey, I need you to confirm for me, is this your home address?
They gotta send
from when you were a child.
Some phishing emails to him, try to get him to log into his PayPal account, get his bank information.
That
it takes
article
a couple
from
weeks.
The cut, the article from the cut that resulted in the woman who
That's
was
right.
the descendant
yeah.
of the Roosevelts handing a man $50,000 in a shoebox. I wanna see it from the hacker's perspective.
That article,
right.
That's about Morpheus. That's Neo at the other end of that article.
Oh man, that would be funny. Or we could do it like this. We could do a split screen where there's two hackers in the same room, mm-hmm. and then one of them is like, okay, I'm gonna run out and do some errands, why don't you like hack and stuff, do you guys, you want some Cheetos? And then we do a split screen and we see the hacker just kind of typing and then the other guy just like living his life, and at the end he's like, did you do it? Yep, I did it.
I did. One piece of feedback I had that you reminded me of with Cheetos is when we cut to what's the name of the guy who is always like the operator, Tank?
Or is Tank, Tank.
Dozer and Tank.
Yeah. I think I always
Dozer is the operator.
Oh, right.
Because
right.
Tank is the bigger dude.
That's right. Every time we see Dozer at his workstation, there's not a single snack there. There's not a single LaCroix. I don't buy it.
Monster energy drink.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Our next category, moment you most related to personally. I have a small one. That first scene with Neo, the very first one, where he tells his friends that he's upset because he saw something strange on the internet, and they tell him he needs to get out more. Yeah, I've had that experience reading too many tweets about climate change. I've been there. Sounded familiar.
I think we scripted an episode of How We Got Here that started with you saying, "Aaron, I saw something strange on the
and
internet."
I'm upset
this
about
week.
It.
Yeah, and I'm upset.
And you said, "Follow the white rabbit, Max."
I did. And then I realized that I was doing plagiarism. So I don't know. Both of you are kind of online. To an extent, right?
Sure,
there have dabbled in extreme.
Why are you saying that as if you are not?
I am saying that we're all extremely
okay,
online.
Okay,
here,
sure. Yeah.
Right? This is one extremely online circle of trust.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself mentally quipping these obnoxious millennial core meme quotes to myself as I was watching it, like Neo dodging the bullets, me yeah. going like, me when I say something controversial about Taylor Swift, like Neo making the bullet stop and fall down, me when I log off. It's just like, oh, I have been internet pilled in a way that the Matrix did not anticipate.
I mean, that is
those are pretty good though. Those are pretty funny. Yeah,
those are good ones. And that is something that the movie kind of encourages, deliberately or not, is to like, if you are an online person, this movie is about you being online.
Mm-hmm.
It is about the experience of posting on the internet.
Yeah, but I never, like, here's the thing. Nobody ever is or looks as cool as Trinity running around a wall in like a full shiny leather outfit.
It's pretty cool.
And beating up a bunch of cops when they're doing internet stuff.
But so many people think they look that cool when they fire off a tweet.
Nobody should think that. That is the danger of this film. Nobody should think that.
One other thing that I related to, and I don't know if Jamel is a fellow New York Times, or I don't know if this resonated with you too. That thing where it's the first day on a new job and the boss keeps trying to challenge you to a kung fu match. Like, we've all been there, right? Like, orientation
yeah,
at the Times, like, 400 right, Joe Kahn, right. Take me into the dojo at 6:20 and saying, stop trying to hit me and hit me. That was your first day as well, right?
Yeah, my first day at Dean McQuay, he challenged me. I was, like,
right.
breathing really heavily.
Yeah.
He was like, you think that's air
you think
breathing?
That's air, yeah. That's
I
right.
always thought that when you guys did that on Pulitzer Day, it was just, like, for show. Like, take out the jumping program and all the, like, Pulitzer people are jumping from the balconies. But it's good to know that it's real.
Yeah, so I'll would say, you say you better come quick because David Sanger's fighting Peter Baker.
I'll say I related to just listening to Dracula Rod Herman remix.
Unfortunately,
I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that song. It's on my gym playlist. I lift weights to it.
Are you unironically listen to?
I
nu metal from the late 90s. I'm impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Dig through the ditches and burn through the witches, my friend.
that is an industrial, like industrial metal classic, right? Like,
it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's not nu metal. Come on.
It's not nu metal is like your Fred Durst.
Yeah, it's all about the Houston. Yeah. Yeah, that's nu metal.
I over the weekend, I was like, I wanted to prep for this. So I was like, let me listen to some like old podcast to hear what other people have said about The Matrix, you know, get some good research. And when I pulled it up on Spotify, I saw the soundtrack and I was like, oh, I should download this and listen to it on a hike. And like 20 minutes in, I was just listening to Rammstein, like in Griffith Park. And I was like, I can't believe this is how we used to live. Like, this is, it sounds really cool, but like making eye contact with people would be like, if they had any idea the garbage music I was listening to right now.
Mm. Straight to jail.
Straight to jail, that's right. Most unintentionally revealing moment.
Okay, so we were talking earlier about how Silicon Valley probably sees themselves as the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar in mm-hmm. this. They are the agents. Like, it was very yes. obvious to me that, like, mm-hmm. Zuckerberg is Smith. Like, right. they are the agents. Mm-hmm. And the delusion that they are anything but the agents trying to enforce, like, this program on the populace is... Mm-hmm. I thought that was, like, great. And I don't think that could have possibly been on purpose, but it was like...
Because they had no idea what was coming. But yeah, right. It really resonates.
Yeah.
I really thought that this works shockingly well as just a general allegory about the social media era. I mean, it's a digital world where we are all locked into it for the benefit of its creators. The world feels real to us, but it's a fabrication meant to keep us occupied mm-hmm. while its creators control us, harvest us for resources. Like, tell me this is not a movie about the Facebook algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was really shocking to me, like, how perfectly it fits. Like, all you really need to change is that instead of extracting electricity, they're like, you're in the pod and they're getting your personal data to sell on, like, the weird open digital marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're hooking babies up. They're like, no, you have a special Instagram for babies or whatever.
Yeah. All of those babies, the Matrix is saying, like, oh, yeah, we did age verification. They're 12 or over. It's fine. most unintentionally revealing for you, Jamel?
I think the movie as social media allegory actually worked. That's it for me. I don't think I have anything else.
What do we think is the biggest real world impact? I feel like there's a lot here. Well, Aaron, you just mentioned this, so I will talk about it now because I've been thinking about this a lot. Is it like the degree to which this movie works is not just an allegory for social media, but is like actually formative for Silicon Valley's view of itself, that like the Sean Parkers, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel's, Mark Zuckerberg's, like this whole generation really thought this movie is about them, like computer hackers, which is what they call themselves in Silicon Valley, believe it or not, as like kung fu rebels mm-hmm. who are going to break the chains of human bondage,
yeah.
wield the internet as a tool of anarchist revolution. Like the fact that it even starts with Keanu Reeves as a disillusioned software programmer at what is clearly supposed to be Microsoft, like that is how all the 2000s era Silicon Valley people got their start. And like it feels silly to think of this as a movie is about like Mark Zuckerberg is Neo, but like when it came out, like Silicon Valley had been saturated all of this. Like, do you guys know the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace? Have you encountered this document?
I have no idea what that is. It sounds very stupid.
It is very...
Yeah, we don't use cyberspace anymore.
Well, just to like give you the context that The Matrix hit Silicon Valley in 1999, a few years earlier, there had been this famous quote from this guy, David Clark, who was one of the founders of the internet. We reject kings, presidents, and voting. We believe in run consensus and running code. There was this document in 1996 by a guy named John Perry Barlow, called Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, that like announces the internet as this new home of the mind where there are going to be no governments. It's going to be this anarchist utopia. We're going to free humanity from institutions and hierarchies. And like when Napster was created, they thought that that was the realization of this revolutionary ideal. Like PayPal was going to break us from bondage to the banks. And Facebook was supposed to be like Neo destroying the Matrix. Like that is literally what they thought it was going to be. And like Mark Zuckerberg in the early days used to talk like he was Neo in the Matrix.
I mean, Facebook was originally just a way to like look at pictures of other people in your class and determine who's hot.
Right.
Like that's literally it. And he, yeah.
But he, like, they really believed that they were, like, he used to say that we're a revolution company and we are fundamentally rewiring the world from the ground up because they saw this movie. They thought, this is about us and we need to engineer the ideals that, like, we have had in Silicon Valley that we believe we've seen actualized on the screen into our products. And, like, that's how you get these social platforms that come out of the next few years after this, where it's supposed to be, in theory, I know it's not, but like they believe that it's these like purely horizontal, ungoverned spaces. It's free from government intrusion. It's a reality, disruption. Pure world of the mind. Right. Disruption.
Disruption culture, which is actually, as we're seeing now, reinvent things that already exist, but worse and more expensive culture. Right. Like, how do we profit from this? Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember when everyone was talking about 3D printers? Yeah, I mean, we're still kind of, but it was like the thing that everyone was like, it was the, they were in the pump part of, pump part of the pump and dump scheme that is every new tech that comes out. They were really pumping up 3D printers. And I remember one time, at the time I was working for a publication that did a lot of coverage about tech. Mm-hmm. And they came, they were like, we've got this new 3D printer that can 3D print food. Oh, like a plant? Like a plant or an animal? Like a cow? Like,
it actually sounds like The Matrix.
It's literally,
they're growing food in pods for us.
But it's like the disruption culture, mm-hmm. or the idea that something is good and should be fucked with just because it can be fucked with, mm-hmm. comes from a fundamental misunderstanding of that there needs to be some discernment, mm-hmm. about why, like, these guys are fucking with something that is inherently exploitative.
Sure.
And I think that Silicon Valley has evolved into a place that views anything that people cannot profit from as somehow exploitative. If it's free, mm-hmm. it's exploiting people who could be profiting from it. Mm-hmm. Or like if it's something that already exists and, you know, we haven't monetized it or attached tech to it, right. it's somehow exploiting us. And it's just like a very perverted way mm-hmm. of thinking about it. I think that another big real world impact that we're just starting to get into, I mean, this isn't tech, but like the gender aspect of the discussion is huge. And, you know, Charlie Jane Anders, who's a great sci-fi speculative fiction writer, blogger, et cetera, has written about how, like, you know, it's good to have stories that are sort of allegories about trans people, but it's cool mm-hmm. that we moved into stories that are actually directly about trans people. But I think that this movie is really revolutionary in the way that it has made a gender allegory, mm-hmm. and nobody realized that they were mm-hmm. watching it at the time.
I certainly wasn't aware of it.
No.
Like, I see it now, but if you had asked me in 1999, I would have had no idea.
Yeah.
And in fact, I remember buying, maybe like in 2000, 2001, at like Barnes Noble or something, a book that was like The Matrix in Philosophy. And there's no discussion of
really
gender or anything in that book.
Wow. So funny.
Lots of reference, like the chapter on Plato's Allegory of the Cave, like lots of stuff about sort of like dualism and representation and reality, but sort of the notion that The Matrix was an allegory about gender identity, I don't think was anywhere near a common circulation.
If they reissue it, they're going to have Judith Butler write the intro.
Right.
Well, it's so funny, especially when you know how much more overt the movie was as written and how much Warner Brothers made them take out, like, Switch as a character who literally switches genders between the Matrix and the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I also think that, like, there is something to this movie's impact on the, like, red pill of it all that I'm not blaming on the Wachowskis, but the movie does articulate this kind of, like, I mean, to go back to, like, the philosophy of it, like, a Platonic ideal of the grand conspiracy, that, you have a sense that there's something wrong with the world, you feel isolated and alone, and it turns out everything that you're feeling is because there is a secret force that controls everything and is suppressing you personally. Mm-hmm. And the solution is to join with like-minded outcasts and to rise up and to smash and overturn the status quo violently if necessary is, like, it's such a perfect expression of the, like, most basic ideal of that conspiracy that it kind of, I mean, it's not always false, obviously. In some cases, it's true. But, like, most perfect articulation of that idea, that kind of anyone can use it, can kind of take it off. And that includes, I think, a lot of people who use it to really good ends and talk about, like, revolution and liberation from capitalism, and a lot of people who use it to really bad ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the reactionary reading of this movie, it was kind of inevitable, given how archetypal it is in the way it presents its world.
Right.
And how much that can appeal to people who have, you know, fundamentally antisocial attitudes and see themselves as these kind of rebels. Although we kind of joked about it earlier, I do think that's sort of, if there's an ideological reason for that Matrix sequel, I think it's entirely a recognition that the first movie does have this broad applicability to some very ugly stuff.
Right.
And the sequel, and the two sequels, in fact, are very much pushing against the notion that you are some sort of like lone hero, right, that you have some sort of like secret knowledge. Like in the sequel, the secret knowledge that everyone has turns out to be completely wrong. Right. The idea that, you know,
their inherited story is kind of a fabrication.
Yeah, it's a total fabrication.
Yeah.
Which might, I mean, that can, I guess it can also reinforce the initial thing. But I do think the Wachowskis very like clearly recognized.
Totally.
The
yeah, absolutely.
Very early on recognized sort of the uses with which the Matrix could be deployed.
Yeah, I do, watching it now, I admit I did kind of wince when there's that Lawrence Fishburne line, you see it when you look out your window, when you turn on your TV, when you go to church, go to work, pay your taxes. I don't, obviously the Wachowskis did not mean this to be a like anti-state, anti-tax, like arch-libertarian movie, but you can see how if you wanted to project any kind of reactionary right-wing ideology onto it, it wouldn't be terribly hard to do, which obviously the Wachowskis became aware of and like have tried to push back against.
Mm-hmm. It gave people sort of an artistic representation.
Exactly.
Of,
yeah.
Like if you have the same problem over and over again in your life, the problem is you. If you're always smelling
the
shit.
The problem is feminist.
Yeah. If everything smells like shit, check your shoes. You know, like it's if, and this is like, no, it could be. The problem is you're
is
perfect,
the hidden hand. Yeah.
And the problem is everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, you know, as a storytelling, as a storytelling like tool, it's useful, but as a life philosophy, it is maladaptive.
It's also, it is like almost word for word the archetypal extremist recruitment pitch that Morpheus is giving Neo. There's even like a phrase for it in extremism study. It's called the crisis solution construct. And like, again, that doesn't mean that like the Wachowskis intended it to be all of the things that it became to a lot of people who wanted to use it towards nefarious ends. But I think it was really interesting to see in retrospect, now that we're so much more familiar with radicalization and how it works, to see it portrayed kind of so plainly on the screen.
There is something genuinely fascinating to me how in 1999, we have a major American, like a Warner Brothers studio picture in which the heroes, I mean, this is more built upon in the sequel, but it's sort of talked about in the first one. The leader of the heroes is a religious fanatic.
Right.
A religious fanatic who recruits, like radicalizes and recruits a group of like-minded extremists who then
shoot up an office building.
Yeah.
And like crash vehicles into buildings.
Yeah.
And basically like, you know, are the agents are sort of like the archetypal Men in Black,
right,
which itself is sort of taken off of the G-Man, the FBI man.
Right.
So it's like there's, I find it fascinating that like this movie exists and the late 90s were a cultural context in which Americans could envision themselves as occupying that particular kind of role. I don't think the literal movie The Matrix could have been made like 5 years later.
Oh, totally. Absolutely not. Totally. Was it? We just hit the 25th anniversary of Columbine.
Yeah.
And watching this movie with that, you know, in mind, this movie makes guns look so cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool, like, as hell.
So cool. Like the coolest scene, and like the bullet casings hitting the ground in slow motion, and like literally no one actually using a gun like looks that cool.
Well, that's a good segue into how this would be different if it came out today. Like both specifically the like post Columbine of it all, which was I think a month after the movie came out. Like
Columbine was April. I think they came out very close to around the same
time. Yeah, it was like a few.
Or they came out. I think they occurred around the same time.
Right. Like, we're probably not mowing down quite as many, like, security guys in leather dusters if this comes out, but also the, like, I think the way that we would think about radicalization, extremism, it would be less of an abstract because it feels like it's so real and so present now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the biggest difference would be that the trans allegory would be just way more explicit.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like Neo would be female when Neo got untagged.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Instead of having to have Trinity in there as like the female. Trinity and Neo look so alike in certain shots, and the way that Neo is filmed, especially when Neo is like,
occurred to me.
Yeah, like recovering in the cot, mm-hmm. and Morpheus comes and sits next to him. My husband pointed out yesterday that like he's filmed like a woman is filmed. Like, just the angles and the lighting and the positioning was very, like, feminine.
Right, right.
And there's
a kind of duality between the two of them.
Exactly, exactly. I think it would just be probably an overtly trans movie.
Right.
I think it would be there'd be fewer dial tones if it came out today.
I'd love the dial tones, like, becoming kind of digitized. It sounded so cool.
It did sound very cool, but I think now I was realizing that the first time I watched this with my kid in, like, you know, 10, 11 years, I'm going to have to be like, now, back in my day, we had to use the telephone to do internet.
Even like the pre-smartphone, like the dumb cell phones, mm-hmm. looked so much cooler.
I know.
I do remember when those specific cell phones came out with the, like, panel flips open. Cool. Yeah.
I still want one of those. If they sold one of those, I would buy one in a heartbeat.
If they reissued them, oh my gosh.
Well, they're doing the light phones now. They need to do a Matrix-specific branded light phone.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I do think if this came out now, Joe, you were talking about this earlier, like, I think it would just have to think very differently about its message of, like, this idea that the world is an elaborate fiction meant to control us and, like, what it does to people coming out of that. And the idea that in the original Matrix, the villain is Cypher because he is just someone, like, who sells out to the powers that be. I think now your Cypher character, the, like, turncoat enemy within, would have to be someone who fell too far down the rabbit hole. Just because we're so much more aware of that now, and it's something that is, like, feels like a much closer cultural threat to us. I think it would have to be someone who is, like, questioning reality to the point of madness, or is, like, becomes too extreme, and they're, like, what they want to do to, like, they want to destroy the entire Matrix and everybody plugged into it. I just feel like our attitudes towards this kind of, like, radicalization and being online and extremism have, like, really changed.
Yeah, the part where they were talking about everyone who is still hooked up needs to be considered an enemy. I think that's a Lawrence Fishburne line.
I was really struck by that, too.
I was like, ooh.
I know.
Should they be? Like, that sounds like something that is very antisocial.
The idea that, civilians are legitimate targets as enemy combatants.
Exactly. Yeah. That would probably have to be a little bit different given the stuff.
Yeah.
last year, I think it was either last year or the year before that The Matrix Resurrections came out. And part of that film, part of the story in that film was that there was some sort of, like, symbiotic relationship now, like mutually beneficial in between machines and humans, at least some machines and mostly and what's left of humanity. And I do think that, like, what that movie didn't have that you would have expected, mm-hmm. is exactly someone who would have viewed that as unacceptable, right? Sort of like someone who would have viewed any cooperation or work with the machines as being a betrayal of humanity. And so I think you're right, Max, the sense that extremism itself being, like, one of the adversaries.
Right. It's something that would be a subject of a lot more interrogation.
Right.
I also think the clothes would be way less baggy. We'd definitely get the menswear guy in here and tighten up some of Lawrence Fishburne's suits. Suits look great, but they were three sizes too big.
It was the 90s.
I know.
It was the 90s.
Three buttons.
It was prescient in predicting the way that Republicans would style themselves for the next 30 years. None of their clothes fit. Men.
I did. There's one point where Keanu Reeves came out. I mean, he had a great fitting suit, thankfully. It actually fit him pretty well. But he had just the top of three buttons buttoned, and it was really high up. Did you guys catch this? It was a very weird look. I couldn't remember if that was a 90s thing, or maybe he just forgetting to keep going down the buttons.
I don't know. I didn't notice that. But it sounds feasible, for sure.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, so we're ready to finish things off with true or false. Let's do it. So I'm going to read out a series of rapid-fire quotes or plot points from the movie. You tell me whether you agree, whether you think that statement is true or it is false. True or false? Quote, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. I remember trying to explain this movie to people in 1999, and I would say it was rated true. I tried to explain this movie to my girlfriend over the weekend. She had never seen it, and it's very hard to explain.
She'd never seen it.
I know.
My wife hadn't seen it till I made her watch it with me like last year.
It's a classic boyfriend making you watch it movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think a boy made me watch it the first time, but it was 1999. A boy was like, okay, go to the theater and see this movie. And I was like, dutifully, yes, boy. I think true, but only as it's like one of those movies like Parasite, where the less you know about what you're about to watch, the more enjoyable the cinematic experience.
Yes.
So it's more of a like preference thing. Like you can explain The Matrix to somebody. It's a cyberpunk action film from the late 90s that explores, you know, what if we lived in a simulation and some people got out and tried to destroy the simulation.
Right.
But like, it's better to not know that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's better to not know.
It is easier to explain post that very specific moment in early 2017 when we all toyed with the idea of believing that we live in a simulation.
I still think that. I still think we live in a simulation. I do. I think that we live in a simulation and we are all autonomous and able to make decisions within that simulation, but we have been abandoned by the programmer and the simulation is kind of like glitchy.
Oh, interesting.
And breaking down.
So it's kind of, we live in the Matrix, but it's the AI has wandered off and left us here.
Yeah, exactly. It's still
someone
kind
was
of just
playing
going,
the sim and then went to go have lunch.
100%.
And
100%.
Left the computer running. The RAM is getting overflowed.
Exactly. That's exactly. I still think.
So would you break out of the pod if that's the case?
Not if I have to eat goop all the time.
Yeah, the goop did. I'm not sure. I wouldn't do what Cypher did. That was wrong. But I'm not sure, knowing what I know.
Kill people?
I would break it. Yeah, then you have to kill a bunch of security guards. That's not cool.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, they seemed fine. They didn't have that coming. All right, true or false? You had a computer program that could teach you anything. The first thing you would learn would be jujitsu.
False.
False? What would it be?
The first thing I would learn, a bunch of languages. That's like the only thing I would
That was my answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, Neo, I know you have to learn jujitsu to go save the world, whatever, but you're doing 10 hours. You don't have one break to learn Mandarin. What if you want to go on vacation? At least sneak in a 5-minute program to learn how to poach an egg.
If you are concerned about digital surveillance, the last place you would want to go on vacation is a place you need Mandarin.
Yes, that's true. Well, if it's all the Matrix, it doesn't make any difference anyway.
That's true. There is a panopticon. I wouldn't learn jujitsu. Mm-hmm. No, I think languages, the languages thing for sure. Or I would download books that like I should have read but didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And just be like, okay, now I've read Great Expectations.
It's definitely, that would be a great way to do like a masterclass program. Uh-huh. So just download the program.
Right. Because like, what if you want to read Ulysses, but not actually?
Now I've read Moby Dick, and while we're out in the Matrix, let me recite fake whale facts to you.
Yes. They should have one of the characters who is just like jamming the great books in the training program and constantly quoting them and annoying everybody.
Yes. Somebody who is neurodivergent, but very hyperfixated on literature.
We definitely needed more people like Mouse who had some weird hobby that they were enacting via this training program. It's such a great opportunity.
Yes.
All right. True or false? The people all around you, businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, are the people we are trying to save, but they are still a part of the system and that makes them our enemy. I'm going to say false. I'm not ready to embrace quite that level of Maoist revolutionary thought.
Oh, God. Yeah, I had to nope out of the three body problem in the first scene. So I don't think I've got the stomach. Yeah, that's false.
Jamil?
Yeah, false.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. No true revolutionaries at this table. All right. So they talk about this idea when the characters go into the Matrix, their appearance mirrors how they see themselves deep down. True or false, you went into the Matrix, your projection of yourself would look exactly the same except in head-to-toe leather.
False. I mean, we've already discussed this. My projection of myself would be decked out in tweed. I look like Harrison Ford in the second act of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yes.
That'd be
That's
cool.
A great one. Yeah. I can't believe that nobody's image of themselves was like just like looked a little bit hotter. Like, no one wants to dial that up a little bit. Like, Joey Pants is like 5'8". He didn't want to be 6'2" in the Matrix. Come on. I don't believe that.
He probably thought of himself as 6'2".
So that's why he should be 6'2" when he goes into the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's just like, how would I prefer to look versus how do I think about myself?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say, as a writer who's dabbled in comedy, I don't think very highly of myself at all. So I think that actually in The Matrix, I would be like, honestly, I'm 40 and I just started getting like gray hair, which I'm not going to dye because feminism.
Good for you.
But like there's still like it like kind of gnaws at your vanity. Mm-hmm. And so just even noticing like a few like little gray hairs, if I went into the Matrix, I would be like an old hag. like the old lady from like Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. I don't know if you read that book. It's very good.
No. Okay.
It's about an old hag.
Okay.
Who's also...
It's about Aaron.
It's about me. I would be like a Baba Yaga witchy, yes. Like hair going all over the place. I'm old. Grouchy.
I guess you would pop into the Matrix and everybody would immediately know how you were feeling because it would be like, oh, Aaron looks like hell today. Aaron's having a down day.
She's feeling bad about herself. I would be the lady from The Simpsons that throws the cats that shows up. That's me. That's how I feel about myself like most days.
She would do amazing in the Matrix though. She knew Kung Fu. Come on.
Yeah. And I'm 8 months pregnant right now. And yesterday I put on a shirt that's a normal shirt and I just fully look like Winnie the Pooh. And so Winnie the Pooh would appear in the Matrix. Humpty Dumpty. Any other round fictional characters, that's probably how I would appear. But I would like to look like Katharine Hepburn.
Well, I think that you would do a lot of, maybe what you would do in the training program is a lot of therapy. So then you would feel really good about yourself and go into the Matrix and look great.
Yeah, Morpheus just sitting there asking me about my mother.
True or false, if the internet were a color, it would be lime green.
That sounds right. Sure, true.
I think true in 1999 for sure. We're kind of post MS-DOS era. I feel like now it's a little bit more of a like corporate-y like blue color, maybe like a light blue.
Yeah.
True or false?
Did anyone have the screensaver for their computer? The
no.
Matrix
screensaver?
Yes,
did you?
Unfortunately, I did.
I 100%
yeah,
did.
Yeah, I did. Aww. It looked so cool.
It did look cool, but I didn't have it.
That was part of the, like, you could just render the internet as random green letters that were falling, and everybody was like, yeah, that's how the internet works. That's,
yeah.
That's what that is, sure.
Yeah, series of letters, not a series of tubes.
True or false, if an evil AI ever took over the world, its secret headquarters would be at the Colonial State Bank Tower in Sydney, Australia.
If an evil AI took over the world, no, I don't think it would be in Australia.
Yeah. In one of the later ones, I was Googling this to try to figure out the answer, and the Google AI is fucked up, and it told me that it was the Salesforce building in San Francisco. And I actually think that would be a great place for the evil AI headquarters.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So we're going to do a few from the Hugo Weaving Agent Smith monologue, because he has a lot to say there that we needed true or false. Let's play a clip from that.
Perfect world was a dream that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up from, which is why the Matrix was redesigned to this, the peak of your civilization. And I say your civilization because as soon as we started thinking for you, it really became our civilization, which is, of course, what this is all about. Evolution, Morpheus. Evolution.
All right, guys, we've been dancing around this all episode. True or false, if the machines were going to design the Matrix to trap us in the peak of human civilization, it would be 1999. Bill Clinton says true. Bill Clinton says this is hard true.
I don't know.
That feels absolutely true. Like because like you want to say 2009, but it's like, oh, we're in the midst of a horrible recession.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like 90. I feel like that's probably in 99.
Yeah, it's kind of peak unipolar moment. End of history.
I brought up Prince before, but he was like, right. He was right. 1999 was like 2000, party over with, out of time. And
yeah.
He was 100% right. 1999 mm-hmm. was like the end of good times. But I will say a second tier nomination would be 2013.
Okay.
Brooklyn. Tail okay. end of like indie sleaze. The music was really good.
Uh-huh.
You could still like live there for fairly. There was like still we still had like a culture mm-hmm. that was like generating stuff. Bands still played instruments. I sound so old. I would say 2013 because it was also like the second Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't like we'd recovered sort of from the Great Recession.
Sure.
Felt
like everything was going to keep getting better.
Yeah, we all had smartphones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't all like. It wasn't like empires were top, like the American empire wasn't in the process of
sure.
toppling in a way yeah. that everyone was aware of. But yeah, 99 or 2013, I would say.
Okay. I'm going to say we can rate this one true. We should really get some like bell sounds for this or something, like a little ding that we can do. Okay. We're going to work on that for the next one.
Is there a Matrix-y sound you can?
Not legally. True or false, human beings define their reality through suffering and misery. I'm going to say true.
I'll say true as well.
Okay.
I agree. True.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of art to back that one up. True or false, if artificial intelligence became self-aware, it would be disgusted by humanity's treatment of the environment. It's environmentalist evil AI in this movie.
False. I don't think it would care.
Yeah, I agree. False. I don't think that they're upset about the coral reefs.
No.
Yeah, I don't think AI would care. What would AI be disgusted by? I mean, Smith is right. Probably the way we smell.
That was going to be the last one. True or false? They would be disgusted by how we smell. I think that's true. I think they would hate it.
A lot of people smell pretty bad.
All right, last one. True or false? There is no spoon. I'm going to say this movie made it true.
True.
It became true. There's no spoon anymore.
Sure, true. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, now that we've done away with spoons, this was great. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was fun.
Thank you for having me.
Offline is a Crooked Media production. Our movie club episodes are written and hosted by me, Max Fisher. The show is produced by Austin Fisher. Emma Illich-Frank is our associate producer. It's mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis. Audio support from Jordan Cantor and Kyle Seglin. Kenny Siegel and Jordan Katz wrote our show's original theme music, and the remixed movie-specific bangers you hear at the top of each movie club are composed by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Thanks to Ari Schwartz, Madeline Herringer, and Reed Cherlin for production support.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothes.
Dan is very busy, clothes only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.